Janae and Golic Jr., the podcast.
That does seem to always be the question. What's it going to take not only for the Los Angeles Clippers to be taken seriously on a positive note, Janae, but what do we have to do to actually get some criticism going their way at a just time? It's Janae Golic Jr. here on ESPN Radio and ESPN News. That feels like the question, right?
Yeah, I feel like because it's year one, it's hard in the NBA for superstars to gel year one. Maybe they're getting a little bit more of a pass.
It just seems like this isn't year, like these aren't year one problems for the Clippers, though. These are Clippers problems. They just happen to be different guys wearing the uniform, and I think that's why this all feels a little too familiar.
Yeah, it's like year one, freshman year, but someone gave you like all the answers to all the tests, and all you have to do is go fill in the blanks, and they left one of those answers empty.
I would say, and you have a certified genius on your team helping you take that test in Kawhi Leonard. We're presented by Progressive Insurance. Quoting home insurance just got easier with Progressive's Home Quote Explorer. Quote and buy all online at Progressive.com. All right, you and I have seen it from the outside. Let's go to someone who had this from the inside. We're delighted to be joined now by former NBA veteran Caron Butler on the Shell Pennzoil Performance Line. And Caron, you played for the Clippers. You know what it's like on the inside. I'm curious, what does it feel like inside that locker room, feeling the perception from the outside world as a part and a member of that team?
Well, you know, thanks for having me on this platform. It's a pleasure and honor. I think that, you know, for the most part, you know, the Clippers have just, you know, been on an uphill battle when you think about expectations. Supposed to win a championship this season, or at least, you know, be in the thick of it for really competing for it. And that, you know, mean getting to the Western Conference Finals and clearly the finals and having a realistic shot at winning. And they fell short of that. And I didn't like the urgency. I didn't like the disposition. You know, listening to the post-game interviews with Paul George talking about, you know, it wasn't a championship bust type season. That sent alarms, you know, to myself, and talking to one of the greatest players ever to play the game of basketball, and Isaiah Thomas, as we was live on NBA TV listening to that post-game news conference. It sent shockwaves to us, because that's what it is. That's what it really is about. When you think about Kawhi Leonard, when you think about him not electing to sign a massive extension with the Clippers, because it was a 2-year situation for him to elect to, you know, pivot away from the organization if things didn't go as expected. And this is not a good sign, you know, for them going forward. A lot of other teams will be better.
Here with Caron Butler, 2-time NBA All-Star. And I just want to say thank you for all the great work you're doing, especially with social justice. You have been the real MVP out there putting in the good work. But speaking of this matchup with the Clippers going down in Game 7, everyone's playing the blame game. Who do you think sort of shoulders a lot of the blame? And I know it can go to a lot of different parties, coach, and obviously people are looking at Kawhi and Paul and also the bench.
Queen, I would tell you this. I don't think we are giving the Denver Nuggets enough credit. When I think about the way that they was assembled, bringing Mike Malone over there, Coach Mike Malone, Tim Conley did a remarkable job, Josh Kroenke, the whole organization, Calvin Booth, assistant general manager, building that team in that nucleus, having Gary Harris, getting a steal in Joker, who's the best center in all of basketball right now and definitely playing like it. You know, they just, as collectives, they play the right way, and they believe. The one thing that we saw when they was down 1-3 in every series, the series before this, prior, and obviously this series versus the Clippers, which was more on the national stage because everybody was watching, is that they believe that they can realistically win a championship. And one thing that stuck out to me in the soundbite with Jamal Murray was he said, I know we have the Lakers next, but they also have us. And that's a sense of confidence by young people. And you just got to get a ton of credit to them. I don't think it's so much about the Clippers. I think it's more about the Denver Nuggets.
Caron, I'm curious then, buying into that idea of a team with that confidence and swagger, there's something to be said about the team that Kawhi Leonard left to come over to the Clippers with that, the Toronto Raptors and what they displayed in the Eastern Conference. And I've heard some people say it. Do you buy into any of the idea of people saying that Kawhi Leonard actually left the better team in Toronto and that he could still be playing right now had he not left the Raptors?
I mean, it's in the Eastern Conference, and Toronto is really good. But a lot has changed in the Eastern Conference. Jimmy Butler went to the Miami Heat. The Boston Celtics have developed. They have a superstar on the rise right now in Jason Tatum. Kemba Walker elected to go to the Boston Celtics, and he's not playing extremely well now, but that one thing about the tables, they will always turn, and you best believe, you know, Kemba Walker is going to figure out a way to impose his will on this series. So a lot of teams got better. Kyrie Irving, Kevin Durant joins forces with the Brooklyn Nets. So who knows what it would have looked like in the Eastern Conference for years to come for the Toronto Raptors and Kawhi Leonard going forward, and not to mention the Milwaukee Bucks, who fell a little short as well. You know, they had the best record in all of basketball, and we didn't give them this much attention, only because it's the Los Angeles Clippers and because we really wanted to see the Battle of L.A. Are we talking about all these things? Only because it's Doc Rivers and he's under the spotlight, are we talking about did he have any mishap as a coach? And we're not talking about Coach Bud and how last season they was up, you know, 2-0 in the series and they lost four straight and then eventually eliminated. We're not talking about the gentleman sweep that we saw on full display with a number 5 or 4 seed in the Miami Heat taking out the Milwaukee Bucks this season in the playoff bubble. So it's a lot of things across the board that you can talk about, but you just got to give credit to the Denver Nuggets. I felt like they was the better team. Their better players stepped up in crucial moments. And, you know, when you have 24 points by your best players combined, that's just not going to get you there in a game 7.
Karan, that's why I appreciate you. You always bring them receipts, and that receipt gang is long. Staying in the East, really quickly, what was your final impression on Bam's block, also Jimmy's final bucket?
You know what? I think Magic said it best. It's definitely up there, top 5 plays I've seen, you know, from a defensive side. And, I mean, we've seen some heroic basketball plays, you know, offensively. You know, we've seen the shots and, you know, all those things, you know, but defensively to, you know, just give you full color on what I saw in that visual moment was just Miami Heat culture at its finest. You saw Jimmy Butler kind of push him right into the teeth of the defense and understanding and trusting his teammate, which is championship basketball. That's winning basketball. Bam was right there. He cleaned it up. It was an excellent block. And then I love the fact that the same way that you see someone cheering when someone hit a game-winning shot is the same way the Miami Heat culture and basketball team get excited about, you know, defensive plays like that. I think it just, you know, really is a mirror of what that organization been about ever since the godfather of the game, Pat Riley, went down to South Beach.
I know there's a lot of people here at the network very excited to hear you giving love to that Miami Heat culture. Karan, we appreciate the time and the insight, man. We look forward to hopefully talking to you again soon.
No problem. Anytime.
Karan Butler, again, 2-time NBA All-Star, joining us on the show, Penn's Oil Performance Line. And I'm glad he brought that up about the Miami Heat, and we got to get into that with him at the end today, because I want to figure out next how much culture one needs to muster in order to pull off the block heard around the world last night. And we got to check in, get the pulse of what's going on in Clippers Nation today. We will talk to someone who will be able to display the pain and maybe the hope for the future. We'll do that next. It's Chenangle Jr. on ESPN Radio and ESPN News.
Chenangle Jr., the podcast.
What does a fall actually look like in the Big Ten now that there's been an announcement of the resumption of play there? Questions we got to get answered. Who to keep an eye on heading into this weekend of the NFL as injuries already starting to take a toll. And we got to address the block heard around the world from last night. It's Chenangle Jr. here on ESPN Radio and ESPN News, Sirius XM Channel 80. We're we're sitting around here and we're still kind of feeling the effects of last night, right? The Clippers lose in dramatic fashion in a game 7, and it's a lot to process, a lot of looking for who to blame, right?
Yeah, the stars were sort of supposed to align where we've got LA versus LA, and I think now everything's recalibrating, but, you know, salute to the Nuggets.
Yeah, big time salute to the Nuggets. We'll get to their upcoming series against the Lakers and what we think is going to happen there. But we got to take the pulse. As we look around, you know, outside of our former colleague Marcellus Wiley and a couple notable others, there aren't a lot of Clippers fans that we can go to really get a pulse of what the feeling is like this morning. And so we needed to enlist some help in here, and we need someone to come in hot. It may not be super hot today. We're going to try and gauge the temperature on this one, Cliff.
Your team got you down.
It's very sad and very frustrating.
We got you.
Because now is your time.
It is an absolute abomination.
Coming in hot with Janae and Golic Jr.
Coming in hot is brought to you by My Computer Career, training for a better life. And to help us take the temperature of how it is on the Clippers side of Los Angeles, We're delighted to be joined now by Clipper Daryl, Los Angeles Clippers superfan with us on the Shell Penzo Performance Line. I just got to ask straight up, this is like a wellness check. How are you processing everything that happened last night this morning?
It's kind of hard, though, man. It's very hard, man. Snoop called me at 5 o'clock this morning and laughs at me. Ice Cube hits me up earlier, just a couple of hours ago, told me, man, I could come over, you know, leave the dark side, come to the lighter side. it's just crazy for me right now, man. I really thought this was our year. I really thought that we had some real special, you know, of having a great owner with a great front office and a great consultant in Jerry West, man. I thought we was going all the way this year, really.
Here with Clipper Daryl and Chinay Ngolick Jr. And you know we go way back, Daryl. You know, I'm in L.A. You've been here. You welcome me here. But the question of the day, Daryl, who is to blame?
I mean, we played so well throughout the season. You know, they just went discombobulated 5-6 in games, 5-6 and 7. There was no ball movement. There was no rotations. The defense was horrible. I mean, who do you blame? I mean, people are saying, you know, they DMing me and texting me telling me get rid of Doc, but is it really his fault? You know, he's not responsible for shooting the ball in the court. The ball in the basket. You know, it's just so hard to say. I just think it wasn't our time. I think, you know, I'm going to blame COVID, man. I'm blaming COVID-19.
You know what? I think at this point we can lump everything in on that, Daryl. So you made the right call on that one. I can hear the right call and text coming in still from Snoop, everyone else on that one, trying to blow you up on this. So we'll give you some time to recover. We just wanted to do a wellness check with you, let you know we're still here. Chinay's not far away, so if you need anything, hit her up. We're going to get you through this, all right?
I can Uber you some food if you need that.
Okay, hey, quit wearing my outfits, girl, okay? All right, you gotta let me design you on the next one, okay?
Hey, you know I love colors, so we can switch it up.
All right, let's do that.
Awesome. All right, stay strong, brother. We'll talk to you soon, all right?
Later, Daryl.
Take care, man.
Clipper Daryl. Yo, we were talking about pantsuits, though.
That is true.
I could rock one of his pantsuits.
I was going to say, if you're looking for that Patti LaBelle sequins pantsuit or glitter pantsuit, this feels like your guy. So we're going to try and, you know, listen, this can be a people helping people thing. We can help him feel better. Clipper Daryl, their super fan about the loss from last night. He's clearly still reeling, taking heat from everywhere. Maybe you guys joining up for a fit of the century is the way this works out.
I am here for it. You know, I love colors and he always rocks it. He looks good. He always outshines me in pictures. It's not fun. Ooh. But it's interesting because we also talk about, you know, we're trying to figure out who's to blame. And we went to social media where he is king of and we got some interesting responses. And first of all, shout out to this name at @Fruity_Pebbler. Fruity Pebbles. Is it okay now to question if Doc Rivers is really the Hall of Fame coach he's hyped to be, or just a guy living off of the vapors of one ring, Kevin Garnett, Paul Pierce, Ray Allen, Danny Ainge, you know, that he got with the Celtics? I was like, ooh, y'all are really coming in hot. Okay, we got another response. AJ, pick a number. Doc was stubborn. PG-13 was wildly inconsistent. Lou Will and Montrez both got into the bubble late and never clicked, which severely limited their second unit's ability to lift and tilt games. And Kawhi was just bad tonight. A collapse this comprehensive has an entire blame of the world to spare, you know? And then lastly, Techno Teacher, the two superstars, and they put in superstars, quote, who could never get past load management to actually play with their team. You can't gel as a team when you are not playing and practicing. And load management is a question because for a team that sort of ran out of gas, you were also the team that employed load management.
Well, and see, I think if this is the one thing we've been asking, Chinay Ngolick Jr. here on ESPN Radio, presented by Progressive Insurance, what would it take for us to actually criticize the Clippers in a meaningful way? And that does feel like the one thing, because that's such a hot button issue, especially for NBA old heads. Like, we didn't just watch it work last year for Kawhi in Toronto, right? Like, I don't feel like we can turn around in the same breath now and say that load management is the reason. Like Clipper Daryl said, there was a whole pandemic in the middle of this season. All that load management stuff from earlier in the year, we can bump that.
I think that makes more sense. You're seeing guys enter the bubble and some find tremendous success. And usually those players are like the blacktop concrete one-on-one hoopers create their own shot type of dudes. Like the ones that are used to going in the middle of the night, like that type. The other things, the other guys that need a feel for the ball, you know, I think of like Pascal Siakam, who momentum works. You think about the entire Bucks team, like that continuity was just halted. And I think it also hurt the Clippers because they had all those late additions to the bubble so that it it wasn't so smooth. It wasn't so easy. But yeah, COVID, like, it's not so simple to jump and play basketball. But still, when you have those players, it's supposed to be easy.
It is supposed to be easy. There aren't supposed to be excuses for that team. And yet, I feel like that's what happens time after time. Maybe we're finally getting to the point. Maybe Kawhi, because I've heard a lot of it today, maybe we finally reached that sort of Mike Trout summer threshold where we talk about him being underrated and under-talked about so much that we're actually talking about it enough. The question I have to ask you right now, Chinee, because you brought up a number earlier today that I didn't know we were doing. I am a fan of analytics. I appreciate what we've tried to do to look for deeper answers. I didn't know, as we assess the block heard around the world from Bam Adebayo and the Heat's overtime win over the Celtics, I didn't realize we had dunk analytics, but here you came this morning in our meetings with the answers I needed.
Yeah, so it's just really surprising because when we watched that play transpire that amounted in Bam Adebayo getting blocked, you know, the fact of the matter is that Jason Tatum, who, let's be real here, he took one dribble from the three-point line, mm-hmm. and he went off. Was it 70? I think Shannon has it correct. It was over 75% chance of make probability. 75% chance of make probability on a dunk. Granted, this was help defense that Bam Adebayo came from. So if he left too early, you know what Marcus Smart would have done? Snuck in for a layup. He timed it perfectly. Jason Tatum, who, what do we remember from last year? Or was it this year? I can't remember. 2020. His dunk on LeBron James. I felt like we don't think that it could go wrong because we've seen it go right so many ways. He dunks, you know, he's going to dunk it, but Bam uses his offhand and stops it, contorts his body without getting a foul. So impressive. It's not the Jimmy Butler bucket. It's the Bam that really saved the game for them.
You mentioned ESPN's make probability for expected field goal percentage for Jason Tatum's block dunk attempt with 3.7 seconds left in overtime was 74.8%. That's what the odds were. Here's what it sounded like.
Tatum holding with 10. Tatum on the NBA logo with 8. Makes his way to the three-point line. Down 2. Drives. Blocked at the rim by Adebayo. 3 seconds to go. And a late foul. Bam Adebayo may have just won game one of the Eastern Conference Finals for the Miami Heat.
He definitely helped win that game, and he definitely won the internet with that. Chinee, best block you've ever seen in the postseason, given everything that's going on, or are we getting too far ahead of ourselves?
Getting too far ahead of ourselves. I mean, Kawhi was impressive. So far this, you know, bubble season, yes. But to me, the best block in my modern, you know, we're young. We're under 30. It's still LeBron James when it's all, you know, the game's on the line, game 7. So, like, come on.
Yeah, no, that one.
But I do love his name. Like, his name works for blocks. Bam!
I was going to say, as Mina Kimes pointed out on Twitter last night, so many kids are going to learn what the word onomatopoeia actually means through Bam Adebayo in that very moment. So lots more to get to in that game, the effects it has for the series, and what to expect for the Celtics going forward as game one of the Eastern Conference went towards the Heat culture. Frank Isola is somewhere livid right now through all of this. But coming up next, we got to figure out and go to the Windy City because there's trouble in paradise for one of the star players on the Bears, and we got to figure out if there is any fire behind this smoke.
Chinee and Golic Jr., the podcast.
Chinee and Golic Jr. here on ESPN Radio and ESPN News. Coming up in about 10 minutes, what happens to the Big Ten players that opted out of the season? Still trying to figure out what might be possible for a number of players who made decisions based on the information they had. That has now changed as the Big Ten announced this morning that they were going to resume play starting on October 24th. We're presented by Progressive Insurance, and we are delighted now, though, to get into some NFL action because it's Wednesday. We can start to turn the page towards week 2 in the NFL, and to do that, we're delighted to be joined now by our own Adam Schefter, ESPN NFL insider. Adam, how you doing?
Hello, guys. Nice to be with you. Appreciate it.
Awesome. Adam, we've heard a lot of news already coming out of week 1. It's been fast and furious, but I want to start off with some of the numbers. The NFL released their latest round of COVID-19 testing information and came back with only 2 positive amongst the player population. Is this the biggest vote of confidence or maybe biggest hurdle that the league had to clear to start this year?
Listen, I think that the fact that there were so few positive tests is a great sign, but I think that the real test is probably going forward now, Mike. I think you've got a situation here where teams this past weekend traveled. They went to other cities. They stayed in other hotels. They were flying. There was contact in games. And we still don't have the results of those tests yet. So these 2 positive tests from the thousands of tests that were conducted were really from teams staying within their own virtual bubbles. Now, what happens is teams play, and it's really 5 days before you get the true read. So Sunday, so really, I would think Thursday, Friday would be the time when we'd have a better read on week one and where we stand in relation to whether it's been successful or not. But the early signs could not be more encouraging. The league and the NFL Players Association have done a great job handling this. And again, the lack of it this summer, who would have thought that we would be going into week two, there wouldn't be any questions about it, and everybody would be comfortable with where the sport is at as it pertains to the pandemic right now.
It's an amazing feat they've managed to pull off with that partnership, no doubt about it. Adam, getting back onto the field, we saw the Bears get an unbelievable come-from-behind win against the Lions, and then immediately we heard a lot of smoke out there about Allen Robinson and his happiness with that team. Was there anything behind that from what you found or heard going through this week, Adam?
Well, it's all about his contract. I mean, he loves Chicago. He said as much today. He wants to be there. That's not the issue. The issue is that he believes that he's worth a certain price. He and the Bears have negotiated a new deal. They have not been able to come close to getting an agreement done. And they're far enough apart that essentially yesterday, and I think this is what triggered everything, he removed all signs and symbols of the Bears on his social media accounts. And when a player starts doing that in this day and age, that qualifies as news breaking, right? Player has deleted all references to his current team. He wants out. He wants traded. Well, it turns out neither he nor his agent, Brandon Parker, have asked for a trade so far. That doesn't mean that something like that couldn't come, but Chicago is not looking to trade him. He has not asked for a trade, but he is unhappy with his contract. There's no doubt about that. And he wants a new deal. The two sides are not close. And if they continue to be far apart on terms, it's not a situation that either side wants, as the Bears are 1-0 and trying to string together more wins.
Here with Adam Schefter, our own ESPN NFL insider, and Chinay Ngolick Jr. And you're absolutely right, Adam. When we saw Giannis unfollow a lot of people, we read way too far into that. But sticking on player movements, there were some rumors about the Browns fielding offers for OBJ. Is there any truth to that?
I don't think right now they're interested in trading him. Now, look, they're 0-1. But, again, I think you're starting to see little embers smoke here. And if they fall to 0-2 and lose to the Bengals on Thursday night, I think that that smoke is going to continue to grow. Look, again, right now, I don't think they're looking to trade him at this time. I would qualify that and say at this time. Because I think anything's possible if this team starts losing. And, look, if they're 0-2, 1-4, 2-5, you pick the number. Do you think Odell Beckham Jr. is going to be happy? I don't know how happy he is right now playing there. So if the losing continues, and clearly him and Baker just don't seem to be on the same page. I mean, there seems to be a disconnect there. So if that happens, that continues, I think anything's possible. But right now, no, the team is not looking to trade him.
Adam Schefter with us here on Chinay Ngolick Jr. Certainly situations to monitor there with a couple of the best and brightest wideouts in the league. One that people don't have to worry about going anywhere is one of the great targets in San Francisco, George Kittle, locked up there, good and ready to go. But Adam, injuries for him this weekend. What can you tell us about his status going into week two?
Not going to practice all week long, and this team has not given up hope that he's going to play on Sunday. But I guess I would say this. They're playing the Jets. You don't think the Niners can handle the Jets in week two? I would think without George Kittle. Look, again, you never know what happens in a game, but I think he was hurt. And the fact that George Kittle, who's a tough guy who doesn't want to miss time, is not practicing this week, I think that tells you something about where he's at right now. Kyle Shanahan himself said yesterday that George Kittle has a sprained knee. So, again, in layman's terms, a sprained knee means he's got a tear in there. He's got a torn ligament of some sort in there. Are they going to go and have George Kittle play with a torn ligament against the New York Jets? You tell me.
Probably not what they're looking for. Probably not what's going to happen, Adam. And so that should be a pretty easy decision, as you mentioned, given the competition on the field. You can check out the latest episode of the Adam Schefter podcast. New episodes every Wednesday, wherever you get your podcast. Adam, we appreciate the time as always, man. Thank you.
Thanks for having me, guys. I appreciate it.
Our ESPN NFL insider, Adam Schefter, there. And just, I think the willingness to not out and out condemn the idea that things with Odell and the Browns aren't a little bit restless there. The idea that, as he said, as those losses potentially pile up, what could happen in Cleveland certainly pings on the radar a little bit, Chinay.
Yeah, it's just, you know, I've been there. I've really been there, being on a team where you're really struggling, and that's when all your insecurities come up. That's when you're playing and you're like, do I need to be here? Like, we're supposed to be good. We're supposed to be successful. So I can understand those qualms happening. But then again, it's week two. But, you know, this is a guy that's tremendously talented, and he hasn't looked like, you know, the guy that we know. So I'm not surprised if, as he says, the smoke continues to build.
Yeah, there were two of the most subtle 1,000-yard receivers in the NFL last year were Jarvis Landry and Odell Beckham Jr. because things seemed a bit unwell in Cleveland. And he mentioned it there. The relationship doesn't seem like it's gelled, sort of akin to Alshon Jeffrey and Carson Wentz in Philadelphia, where for whatever reason, two good receiver and quarterback combinations just can't seem to get on the same page. You wonder what that breeds going forward, because if there is a potential change at some point, people are going to start to look at Odell and say, all right, you were kind of abrasive in New York when you were there. It wasn't able to work out in Cleveland. What exactly is the deal with what we thought was one of the most talented, productive wideouts in football?
Yeah, it's not so easy. Sometimes you think, is it personality? Is it coaching? Is it chemistry on the field? And a lot of times it needs time. But when we have these great expectations based on the talent on the roster, then you don't have time. And that's what puts the pressure on these guys. And it's funny because you talk about two stops. Well, there's another guy out there that made two stops, but is doing pretty well for himself. Jimmy Butler. So sometimes it's better on the other side, but sometimes people wait it out. And I think the question here is, How long will he be comfortable, you know, in that misery?
I think it's a great reminder that even for great players at a position like wideout, where you're not the quarterback touching the ball every play, you're dependent on somebody else, fit is so unbelievably important even at the top level, and we probably need to take that more in account for a guy that we have seen produce at the high level that Odell Beckham Jr. has. So plenty more on that coming up. Our thanks to Adam Schefter. But coming up next, we had a number of Big Ten players start looking towards the NFL during the course of the shutdown. Now that the Big Ten is reversed course, do they get to do the same? We'll get to that next. It's Shanae and Golic Jr. on ESPN Radio.
Shanae and Golic Jr., the podcast.
Questions in the NBA. Who's to blame for what we saw in Los Angeles? Or are we truly not giving enough credit to the Denver Nuggets? We'll address that with a special guest coming up in about 10 minutes. It's Shanae Golic Jr. here on ESPN Radio and ESPN News. Mike Golic Jr. and Shanae Agwumike. But Shanae, like we always talk about, we love going back to our college days inside the locker room and some difficult decisions that have to be made. And this is actually one where the ball is interesting in your court, because on a couple of fronts, this relates to you. So the Big Ten announced this morning that they were going to come back and they were going to resume play after announcing their postponement earlier. They're going to come back and start playing games on October 24th. Here was the Big Ten commissioner, Kevin Warren, talking about the decision to return to football.
The only focus and goal that we've had over the last 40 days was to safely allow our student athletes to return to competition so they can fulfill their dreams of being able to get a world-class education at one of our 14 institutions, but to be able to compete at the highest possible level from an athletic standpoint. And our chancellors and presidents, they have been laser focused from day one to making sure that we create an environment to allow our student athletes to participate in the most safe and healthy manner.
And Shanae, well, I believe all that to a certain extent. It sort of, it feels weird 50 days after you botched this pretty badly. The president has tweeted at and called you. You've had nothing but loud complaints and in some places formal legal complaints from parents, players, and coaches alike in this situation. I believe that all these benefits, and oh, by the way, the fear of missing out and all the money you stand to lose in this as true altruism in this situation. But we know in that 40-day period, some players made decisions, and we saw Wyatt Davis from Ohio State, Sean Wade, one of their great corners, and others made the decision to go and turn their efforts towards the NFL draft. And the question remains now, if players have had contact with agents, anything like that, would they be allowed to potentially go back to the college ranks? Or if you had the opportunity, Shanae, would you even think about going back as things are currently situated?
So I like this in twofold. having the opportunity to play, that is a great option for these student athletes, for these athletes. If they want to go back and play, I hope that happens. And that's one thing, that's one rule that the NCAA has really gotten right, or at least better. They've allowed these players to, when they feel like they can transition to the next level, go out and test the waters. And if they don't like what they're hearing, they can go back and still get their eligibility. I think because of the unprecedented situation we're in now, they should be afforded the same ability. So I'm hoping that those players that have, and we've seen some big names, as you said, like opt out and sort of say, I'm going to take my talents to the next level. If they're like, hold on, maybe I do get a few more reps. Maybe I do have a little bit more time. It'd be great to see them back. And, you know, since I opted out of my season, it's not just when it comes to availability, when it comes to health, right? Like, you know, coronavirus is one thing we're dealing with. Also, there are a lot of players that sort of need a little bit more time, or they're making these decisions based on their needs, you know, and those needs are very individualized. When it came to me, I had dealt with some injuries, some real injuries. I always tell people it was right knee microfracture, left Achilles surgery. Your girl's a comeback queen. But still, those things, that short runway that these athletes have to make the decision and then to go back and play. What's the timeline? Today is September.
We got September 16th today. Kickoff is supposed to be October 24th.
For me, I need, and I feel comfortable with, 2 months. Like, I need 2 months of pounding the pavement and working, and that's not necessarily the case. So there are going to be some people that have some different challenges, and that's why I had to make a decision to opt out. So it's a very fluid situation, but I think the number one thing, and I'm glad that there is some precedent sent from a couple years ago, is that the players should have options to figure out, hey, is this the right move for me? And options to say, you know what, I made this decision, but it may not, you know, I'm glad football's back. I want to go back to my team, because I feel like if you're in that situation where you're thinking about foregoing your senior year playing, you're like, hold up, no, like, that really matters to me.
Well, and I think there's a couple of things to weigh in there, because you're right. This is a circumstance that changed so drastically, and this is kind of akin to when a player goes and commits to a school that all of a sudden has a coach leave or get fired, has some major change there that, all right, what I bought and what I'm being sold now are two completely different things, and so they should be allowed, because there's such a limited window for these players, a 4 to 5 year window to actually get on the field and do their thing. But you brought up what it takes to go in and get ready. That would be my biggest concern for some of these stars, is the idea that in college especially, this ain't pro sports on any level. It takes more development. It takes more time to get ready for some of these schools that have had pauses because of COVID-19, haven't been in practice, haven't been in pads yet because of the way the timeline went before. So I'm going to be a little uncomfortable and a little unsure if I'm a first rounder, like a day one talent, if I'm a guy that's necessarily comfortable going back on short notice for a short season.
Yeah, and you know, you're right, because like, you think about the transition, like, this is all about the transition, also the decision, but the hardest, in my opinion, in my estimation, football is the hardest thing to transition to. Just the maturity you need, the time you need, you know, to develop so that you can take those hits and you can be ready for the next level. Basketball, we're sort of ready made. Right. So like, our windows are a little bit longer. Like, when you feel good, you can transition. So this is something that's extremely sensitive, especially in the sport of football, which means, and this is what you've been preaching from day one, listen to the athletes' voices, because when we have crazy scenarios, tough scenarios, these athletes are going to be advocating for themselves, because guess what? It's not just their health when it comes to the virus. It's their health when it comes to their prospectus as a future talent and also a person that wants to just choose to compete for their school. There's so many factors, and I've always told people, it's on the individual. It's not on the institution.
No, it's not, especially at this level, because you're right. As much as I heard Congress the other day say these athletes are paid in the greatest currency that we have, a free education and all this stuff. Like, I have not seen anyone keep their lights on with the diploma explicitly in this situation. It's more complicated than that. And so when it comes to this, you're right, it is maximizing value at this level. So maybe if you're any of these players at Ohio State and you think you got a real shot at a national championship, it's hard to walk away from that kind of opportunity. But if you're Rondell Moore at Purdue, who's a guy who's going to be one of the top receivers in the draft, and you're looking at this saying, yeah, I don't know if I came back to finish in the middle of the pack and play the fifth seed from across conference in the Big Ten, might not be what he signed up for. We'll have much more on that. Plus, the Miami Dolphins' struggles in recent years may all be traced back to a Jay Cutler jersey. We'll explain that next on Chenango Jr.